Mr. Andy Lowe.
You know, the title gets longer every week. I'm going to have to step my game up to keep living up to it, I think.
Well, and I keep getting a little more creative. It depends on how much coffee I have that day.
Well, I'll tell you, I feel very insignificant and humbled, though, by what I saw the other day. Talking about Iron Man, I saw a gentleman. His name is Dick Hoyt, and he's got a son named Rick, and his son was born with cerebral palsy and had some damage from oxygen deprivation at birth. And as a youngster, he wanted to participate in a 5-mile fundraising race, but he's handicapped. Obviously, you know, he can't run. Mm-hmm. So he told his dad he wanted to participate. And by the way, this kid can't talk. He communicates like with his eyes and a special computer and whatnot. So told him he wanted to run. His dad pushed him through the 5-mile race in a, you know, in a carrier. And this led them off on what over the last 30 years has ended up being more than 1,000 races, including 6 Ironman finishes, several participations in the Boston Marathon and other events. I mean, just an amazing story.
I've seen that. I've actually seen him competing with, you know, pushing the carriage, right, fine. And then he actually has a trike, or he has a towing him in the bicycle. Portion, and then actually has a raft that he's towing.
He has a raft that he pulls him in on the swim. Yeah, it's just absolutely amazing.
So, no excuses. Talk about empowering yourself.
Exactly.
And getting out of your
own
way.
No excuses.
All right. Outstanding. All right. So, with us today, we have Rich Simons from Edge Business Systems.
That's correct.
And
Glad to be here.
Talking about that. And we also have Rick Reynolds from Ask Forensics, an organization that really talks about digging into, from a forensic approach, your sales process, what's working, what's not, if I'm not mistaken. So we'll hear more about that. All right. So, Rich, let's start off with you. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your organization.
Steve, thanks for having me here. My background is civil engineering, land development, real estate. So as I...
It's a perfect path for a sales guy.
It was difficult during the transition because I realized that when I started making sales calls, not everyone was as warm as they were when I was in the civil engineering field. They would take my call. They would talk to me. I got a lot of not interested hang-ups on the phone. I would show up in person. They didn't want to see me. Thanks for the business card. That would go in the garbage. So it took a lot from the beginning to teach myself how to sell. And there's been a lot of conventional ways that I was taught, be it cold calling, emailing, that route. And over time, that became absolutely exhausting. So trying to get into a more efficient, calculated approach, that's why I have gotten to a situation now where I am one of the owners over at Edge Business Systems. It's a privately, locally owned dealership here in Atlanta. Background consisted of corporate structure. And I saw what that was doing to the customer, and services, the number one aspect of what I do every day. So
so what does Edge Business Systems do? As you're saying, you're locally owned and delivering what kind of services?
We are everything having to do with the life cycle of a document. So anything from a copy, print, scan, document manage, managed IT services, scan management, content management, anything having to do with a piece of a paper, we are either placing equipment to make that more efficient for the processes for a customer. We are assisting in a transition from a heavy, heavy paper environment to a paperless environment. We know for a fact that not everyone's going paperless, whether they tell themselves that or not. We've seen and we've been experienced with medical industries, the mm-hmm. legal industries, manufacturing, and we are trying to reduce the number of touches to a piece of paper, which in turn increases the efficiency to the processes of the company. So just comes down to measuring what they're currently doing first and then simplifying a solution to them and then managing the relationship moving forward.
So it sounds like it's really more, besides touching and managing the documents, you know, what I would think of is, you know, the old printer sales, which is not what you're doing. You're doing a lot more than that.
The industry is still stuck in the copier printer sales mentality. While we do offer that, and that is one of our core solutions, what has allowed us to grow to this point in our company is the fact that we are focusing on other conversations within the same accounts, conversations that the typical copier or printer salesman would not focus on because they're strictly driven by a corporate quota, and they don't have the time to focus on the processes or the initiatives because they have a monthly quota to reach, and they need to get paid.
So they're selling boxes as opposed to selling solutions, and it sounds like you're selling a solution.
Correct. We're a lot more patient, and the fact that I've been doing this now for 6 years, my partners have been doing this over 20 combined, so we're not going anywhere. Where we've realized that how much turnover exists in this industry, that if you don't succeed in the first 3 to 6 months, you're out the door because you can't handle the day-to-day grind. And who suffers more than just the sales rep is the customer. Because over any contract term, they could see 3, 4, 5 different reps that tell them the same thing, and they know more about what they're selling than the new rep does who is fresh into the industry.
Interesting. Cool. I have a bunch more questions, but I want to bring ourselves over to Rick over at Ask Forensics. So, Rick, if you would, tell us about yourself and Ask Forensics.
Well, thank you, Steve. Ask Forensics is a company that we started 6 years ago, but it's built on a proprietary approach that I personally designed in the late 1980s. We were working with a venture capital group that was part of a scientific lab called Battelle Memorial Systems in Ohio. And Battelle was spinning off these technologies, and the scientific advances, the venture capital arm, was funding these technologies and building businesses around them. And they had one company that kept coming back for more and more funding, and they felt they didn't know how to sell. So the venture capital folks asked me to come in and evaluate prospects who said no, basically do a lost sales follow-up program. And we found that it was very powerful. We made our presentations, and there were people in the room who had debriefed some of the same people we had, and their jaws were dropping. They just weren't hearing the things that we heard. So I built a business around this and saw a niche, realized that this could get us into the Fortune 1000 space. So our first client was Sun Microsystems, and built the company and got the Holiday Inn and FedEx and other companies on board, and then sold that in the early 2000s. And then decided, what am I going to do next? And ended up meeting who's now my equity partner.
So you sold the business, and then you still had to figure out what you had to do next. You weren't going to be retiring on the beach?
Well, I was playing tennis every day, Steve, and enjoying that. I didn't lose all the weight that I've heard you've lost, but I gained the weight that you lost.
Hey, thanks for that plug, by the way. Yes, I'm down 30 pounds right now. I appreciate that.
allegedly.
All right. Well, yeah. That's all I have to say about that right now. All right, so Rick, so is Ask Forensics the next iteration of that?
That is correct. It is the next iteration of that at a more strategic level. So we started the company in 2006, and our first account was Aramark. They do the food service facilities management. They're a great partner to this day. FedEx was our second piece of business, and we still work with them. And we have a host of probably a dozen core clients that we work with. Since 2006, we've evaluated $8 billion worth of our clients' sales contracts and proposals. So let me take a step back and tell you what we do, and then I've done that background.
Yeah.
We take a forensics approach to sales and account retention. Mm-hmm. On the sales side, we call it sales forensics. When our clients win or lose, we come in as a third party and do a very deep assessment through interviews at senior level executives within these companies to identify as a third party what went wrong or what went right.
Now, are you doing it for both the customer and the selling organization and the customer?
We are focusing on our client's customer.
Okay. That's all right. Good. That's kind of where I was going. All right.
And on the account retention piece, we call that account forensics. And this is where we take that same approach through very extensive interviews and probes. We identify where are the minefields, where are things going sideways for our client, or where are things going well. Hmm. And we've identified $3 billion worth of at-risk business.
Wow. And then I think we were speaking before the show, too. With that, finding those at-risk businesses, some actual actions that they can take to minimize or reduce that at risk.
Exactly. Very specific actions. I mean, we come back and we're able to identify the very specific points, mainly strategic, some are tactical, and put together recommendations for them to immediately go in and start making changes.
Hmm. Interesting. Good. So I have a bunch of it because I'm curious to see, and I think I hear, if I think, Rich, from, you know, you had started off a little bit of where, you know, how you came into being. And civil engineering, again, not necessarily an area where we start to think of people moving into sales. But that's where you came, and you had a lot of hard knocks. What were some of the key things that you learned along the way?
I realized that as time progressed, the 10 calls a day, 10 emails a day, 10 cold calls a day, that mentality was not going to get me to where I needed to go. So strategically aligning myself with partners in different industries in which we were calling on the same people inside that prospective company. To this day, that has been the biggest change that I've made in my sales philosophy, is aligning myself with other technology individuals and companies, whether it is IT services, whether it is telecom, whatever the case may be, and going in as a group sale to that same individual, more so than the individual sale. That way, the person is dealing with one group or one individual, and they are holding us, the three of us, the four of us, responsible. That way, there's no finger pointing within that account if something goes wrong underneath the technology umbrella. A lot of times, when the IT consultant is on one end and we are on the other end, and there's an IT issue, the customer's in the middle, and I'm pointing the finger at him, whether it's his fault or not, or he's pointing the finger at me, and the customer suffers. So what I've done is I've aligned myself through networking groups, through the relationships I've made, that one uniform approach to the same individual inside a company goes a lot further, and it really benefits the company that we're going to be calling on, because they're not going to leave us if someone is 5% less expensive or 7% less expensive, because the value to them is they're dealing with one group and one individual, guys that know one another, and guys that are going to keep hold each other responsible.
Sure, the old saying of, you know, one throat to choke, so to speak.
Exactly.
Right? Exactly. And so, and you talked a little bit earlier before the show is around the service. What's happening is, you know, it sounds like you have the organization, Edge Business Systems, is really about you have longevity in the industry and in the business, and you're going to be around for a while. But is that true for a lot of the organizations, your competitors, let's say? Are they locally owned? Or are they being controlled and owned by, you know, large Fortune 1000 companies?
We see a combination of both. And we see the manufacturers here present in Atlanta that we do compete with every day. And the things that we've heard from their standpoint is everything is driven by response and service, and it comes down to the individual that you deal with. The bigger the company is, the more likely the service is going to fall by the wayside. Mm-hmm. A lot of the companies that we call on are not these mega companies, the 1,000 employees and up. It's the mom and pop shops. It's the 250 employees and less that feel that they're too small for us, because they've been told that by larger companies. So when we go in to talk to them about solutions, the first question that's being asked of us is, how long have you guys been doing this? Are you consistent in this industry? Because we've seen a lot of turnover with people in your seat before. We've heard this dog and pony show before. And we feel that we're too small for you guys. So what we do in that situation is we prove that every relationship is important to us, because we don't know where that's going to lead us in the future. And it's just, it's our philosophy in which we service the relationship, we manage the accounts, and we just try and simplify the solutions that we present to them. Getting back to what I said about whether it's telecom, whether it's IT, whether it's what we do, into one managed solution. Mm-hmm. And the larger companies that we've seen through turnover, through changed, that's fallen by the wayside, because, you know, with the rep who gets into this industry, like I mentioned before, it's just, what's your quota? Have you hit this quota this month? If you haven't hit this quota in 3 months, you're gone. And that really affects the customer. I've talked to customers, and they're truly affected by it.
Yeah, they're jaded, so to speak, right?
Exactly.
Interesting.
Now, is that industry specific to you guys, I mean, your experience so far, or do you feel like that crosses many, many platforms?
It crosses many platforms. I mean, I have friends and relationships in every aspect of every industry that are in B2B sales. And whether it's insurance, whether it's, you know, 401k investments, it just comes down to service. And it comes down to the commitment that individual is willing to show that prospect about, are they committed to this industry? Because if they're not committed to this industry, then how do you know if they're going to be there in a year? If they're going to be there in 2 years? You want a lifelong business partner in every aspect of what you do from a business standpoint.
So Rick, let me flip that to you. So just out of curiosity, one, I don't know if you get involved in forensic at that level, but assuming if you do, do you find that's kind of a universal principle, or do you find that you go in and look at individual companies and find, yes, for this industry or that industry, it's absolutely crucial, and for other industries, maybe it's not the case?
That's a very good question, Andy. Everything we see, it's universal. Yes, there are some specific issues that relate to a segment or an industry, but B2B selling is B2B selling. And as we trend all of the forensics insights that we have, it comes down to what Rich says. It's really down to the sales team, and it's to the relationship. It's not price. Dollars have things to do with it, don't get me wrong. But for the most part, almost half of all sales deals go sideways because of the sales team. And when you then dissect that, it gets down to understanding needs and requirements. That is the most important issue that we uncover. Now, that's in our world. I mean, and let me explain our world. When we're working with Marriott, and they are in a horse race with Intercontinental Hotels or Hyatt, what have you, they're all five-star companies. They can all handle travel requirements very well.
Sure.
FedEx and UPS, I mean, the trucks and the planes, they're going to, but either company's going to do a fine job. So then it gets down to the nuances. And if those companies understand the needs, they're primarily coming in with the same or similar financial model. So that's where the differences in what we forensically evaluate get down to the subtle degrees of differences, but the impacts are huge.
So, but what are you seeing for some of these subtle differences? I mean, I'm hearing from Rich, and I think it resonates with me, is that, you know, we're here for the long haul. They're building trust, they're building a rapport, and they're getting referred in, or they're partnering with people. So it sounds like it's just reinforcing your credibility and trust. But I'm curious to see what you're seeing as some of those subtle nuances as you get down to that.
Well, one subtle nuance that it's interesting is you look at a major account. Mm-hmm. Let's just pick a number. It's a $50 million account, and you've got an account team, and you've got support teams, be them technical teams, IT teams. Well, that's technical, but they could be separate. Corporate teams, finance teams, all interfacing with this customer. We're doing an evaluation right now that's very, very strategic. The client loves the account team, but it's falling apart in the support they perceive or are actually getting from some of the other teams that our client has in place to support the account. And I want to get to one point. It's perceived, because right, many times our clients are doing well, but they don't communicate what they're doing. So if you're not communicating it, it may not get to the right levels within the client organization. Therefore, they think you may not be delivering to the level that you should.
Well, and, sure, and perceived has a huge value for what you guys do, right? Because if I understand correctly, and based on some of my own experiences, as a third party, these people are more open to telling you what their perception is, whereas the company itself may not be able to get that information back.
Or if you don't have a title of sales on you. I mean,
that's right.
You know, the old saying is, hey, I'm here from sales and I'm here to help, right? You know, that's not necessarily what you hear. So I think of the aspect of perception, because in our world of sales, I think it's not just in Rick's place, Andy. I'm also of the mindset, you know, our customer's perception of the value that we're going to bring is their reality. So that's for, mm-hmm, we're working with that reality. And I just think of the nuances of the differential, because it could be that they love the account team, just as you're seeing, but then everyone else that touches that sales, or that opportunity, that account, has to have some sales savviness. And that's kind of where, you know, my old saying around this whole show is that everybody's in sales, whether we believe it or not. If you touch the customer, you're in sales, and you're going to impact how the customer perceives your company, your brand, your relationship.
And I think to what Rick said on the front end with sales individuals, it comes down to setting expectations. And for so long, salespeople have been looked at or viewed at, especially in my industry, as the used car type people, they're trying to pull a fast one on somebody. And I think on the support side, like Rick was talking about, if the sales team or the sales guy says that things can be done one way, and then the support team comes in, they say, well, I don't know what, again, to that point, guess who's stuck in the middle? The customer's stuck in the middle. So right. On the front end, it's absolutely critical. Number one, honesty is the best policy. If you can't do something, tell me you can't do something up front. Not one solution out there is going to be able to fix all problems. It's impossible. So,
well, Steve, you brought up a very good point that everybody's in sales, and indeed that is the case.
Yeah.
When we look at accounts and prospects, and they have people from different disciplines coming in and interfacing with the customer, oftentimes they're involved in the sale, particularly in the outsourced world. Companies mm-hmm. that do outsourcing, the prospects want to see the on-site management team that will be in place. Well, that on-site management team better be good at selling and better be good at interacting with people, because if they're not, even though sales is not their daily discipline, the deal can go sideways because of that. And we've seen that happen.
Now, what would be some of the recommendations you would see if, I mean, they love the account team, but it's starting to break apart, you know, with the service or support? How do you handle that with your clients in the next step?
Well, the next step would actually entail several things. First is that they need to address what we've identified.
Hmm.
And this is not going to be done overnight. In the case of this example, we're recommending that they put together a task force team. Bring in the best and the brightest within your organization that handles other accounts in this vertical and pull out best practices from them. What are they doing that's most effective that you can copy? You don't have to invent everything from scratch.
Sure.
And we'll have a menu of things to do. But then it is critical that our client get with their client. Because this whole process, this whole forensics process, call it whatever you want, if companies do it themselves or if we do it, whatever, we've raised expectations. Rich just talked about that. So if you're the account and we're interviewing you on behalf of Andy's company, you know what we're going to hear.
Yeah. No, I'm laughing because I'm thinking, wow, you've asked the question. Now, if UPS hired you to go to one of their key customers to do a whole bunch of research around what we're not doing right, you get that information. You're right, absolutely. You've raised the expectation that for UPS that they're going to now have to represent. They're going to have to bring and address some of those issues that the customers brought to bear or raised a flag around. That could actually work even against them if they don't take it up.
Right? In fact, we have one client that loves us, and they decided to put the program on hold because their teams were not addressing it. And we agreed with that because you're doing more damage than good if you don't come in and address it. But if you do address it,
yeah,
that's where you get the return.
Interesting. So it sounds like you're getting so the business is going well in regards to the clients are happy and if they take the next steps after that your recommendations.
Yes, that's correct.
And that's your brand, your credibility, and I think I go back to the idea of, you know, in this new world of social media, you know, the new marketing is customer service. You know, to what you're saying, Rich, is really about, you know, if someone has a bad experience, they're not going to call you up and tell you. They're going to go on Twitter or Facebook or LinkedIn and basically tell everybody and all their friends that, you know, they had a bad experience. So it's working in your favor. So how is your marketing going, and what are some of your slogans? What's your slogan for Business Edge Solutions?
Well, for what we're doing, and it just comes down to how I have always sold, it's measure the situation, simplify the solution, and manage and service the account. And by that, I mean so often in our industry, people come in with that, what type of machine do you want? What do you want? And then they come back with a quote, give me a proposal, waiting to hear back from this person. No one takes the time, and I think this is where my technical background, my engineering kicks in, is no one takes the time and no one is patient enough to go through and measure the cost, the production, the volume, the processes of what the individual, what the organization is doing. They don't have that time. They don't want it because they're looking for the quick sale. We're doing that because what we want and what we're trying to present to the customer is a solution that does not affect their bottom line. Most often than not, customers do not know what they're spending in documents and production and copying and printing, outsourcing expenses, et cetera. Everything underneath the umbrella of a paper document, we want to manage down to the single sheet of piece of paper. So on one hand, we have their total cost monthly.
Mm-hmm.
And how can we reduce that cost to make up for a new software system that they're looking at moving forward? We're trying to create a gap in which they have a monthly outlay to create revenue to acquire that new system. So when it's all said and done, they will not have a net add expense to the bottom line. They've just shifted costs internally to make up for a software solution that they're going to utilize to help improve efficiency surrounding documents, maybe a new ERP system, a new document management system. It's true consulting at that point.
So you're really taking the whole the process and measuring it out to see what's effective, what the cost is in that process.
What's their current spending? I mean, if I went into a CFO's office right now and I said, what is your current spending on everything related to documents? I don't know. Talk to my office manager.
You know, paper, cost of the renting of the copier, those are the things that they would think to measure, and it sounds like there's more beyond that.
It's much more beyond that. And people medical practices that I work with, they have 50, 100 network printers inside their office, and that when they need consumables, go out to the local supply store and order more toner. Well, all of a sudden I say, what have you all done the last 6 months with respect to toner? Well, we spent fill in the blank. Oh, there's no way we're spending that much money. Well, you are. Because you haven't measured the situation. And when you bring that to the CFO's attention, you're spending this much on document production, on IT, on phones. There's a way to reduce that expense because they might have thought about a new software solution or a new asset in a remote location for a long time, but we don't have the money.
We
don't have the budget. Well, you haven't gone through the process.
So you're really going and looking at it from a holistic perspective and then helping them build an ROI. For your solution.
Absolutely.
So, and it sounds like it's very similar to what I think about as you're going in as a third party, Rick, looking at your customers, your client's sales process, or at least their sales event for one customer from a holistic perspective and saying, you know, is this working or what's not working? Is that?
That is correct. I mean, forensics, we all watch this, maybe we don't all watch the CSI shows, but they have to look at the whole situation. And when you get that whole holistic view, you begin to see the little points that are the problem areas.
Mm-hmm.
Some are connected, some are not. We take an exploratory surgery approach to what we do. When we engage in a forensics interview, it's anywhere from 20 minutes to an hour with one executive, and we'll interview one to N executives at a prospect or account for a client. So it's not uncommon for a report that we deliver on one account to be built upon 3, 5, 6 hours of direct executive feedback, one-on-one. And it's pulling out the little nuggets of the comments, and we're getting paragraphs of answers. So you read through, and there it is, and there it is, and there it is, and they're connected, and they're not, but we've got to weave that story together, but it has to be holistic, exactly what you said.
Well, and I think, too, and I have an idea for Rich on this one, it's almost like we can talk about for a marketing spin for you is marketing is document forensics. I like that idea. I'm going to give that to you.
That's another company right there, document forensics.
Well, I'm going to get a piece of this.
We'll work on an arrangement offline.
There you go. Well, guys, let me back us up a step. You know, because you both have presented some really good cases about the value of what you bring to the table and really helping customers understand how your services are going to help them. But a step before that, and Rick, you were touching on this, or Rich, you were touching on this earlier, just about some of your experience in learning to be a salesperson. How do you get that CFO that if you told him how much are you spending and he really went through the process, you know, he'd be amazed, and obviously this would make a lot of sense. How do you get that CFO to give you the 5 minutes to go through that process? How do your sales guys crack that code initially? And Rick, I'd like you to maybe address the same question.
That is a... That's an interesting question. And when I first started, how do you get that CFO in the 5 minutes? Maybe 10 calls, 10 emails, 15 stop-bys. It is just nonstop energy exerted to try and get 5 minutes. And that's what attributed to so much turnover because it takes so much time. Now, the accounts that I talk to, that I prospect, it's all done through relationships. It's all done through social media. You know, whether it's LinkedIn, whether it's Twitter, whether it's Facebook, people know people, people buy from people. And in my industry, no one knows that quote-unquote copier guy because there's so much turnover. No one is consistent in this industry. So you know, back when I first started five, six years ago, it was tough to get to the CFO. I'm not going to lie. It was communicating through an office manager, a business manager, and her turning around and presenting to the CFO. I mean, the chances of me getting that deal straight through the floor. I mean, it was impossible. I mean, if she was in my industry, she'd come work for us. But now it's working with the people that I know to just say, hey, give me 15, 20. What's the downside? There's zero downside. All I can do is confirm that what you're doing, you are in the best possible situation. You're as efficient as you're going to get. Upside, well, where do you want to start? Do you want to talk about 15% reduction? Do you want to talk about maintaining what you're currently spending and adding new software packages, assets moving forward? It just comes down to the old school mentality, and there's reps still out there. There are reps coming into this industry with organizations that have old school mentality from an organizational standpoint. They bring reps in. They say they have no training programs in place. They give them a book of business, and they say, go sell. Well, here's a book of business that the reps attain, and they're looking for low-hanging fruit. So they'll sell for the first 3 months. And then after that, when they're looking to actually get into what sales is all about, building that pipeline, prospecting, they don't know how to do that because the companies, the corporations don't invest in their sales team, which blows my mind. Sales leads companies, and they're not doing that. So moving forward, and what I've learned is that when we add sales staff, we've been adding sales staff, they're coming into an environment, a sales structure, like how I taught myself. The right way to do things, the efficient way to do things, because if we make it easy, we make it fun for them, they're not going to look to jump to another company for 10% bonus, signing bonus here. They're not, because selling will become easy because they're selling to people that they know. People buy from people. So that's the long-winded answer to your question. So hopefully we got to the point on that. But
no, I think that was solid. You know, Rick, is there anything that's different in your perspective for the service that you guys are selling?
Well, we're in an interesting world because we sell, but we're also evaluating how our clients sell. So yeah. I guess it's like a sex therapist in the sense for those that get to practice and preach.
Sounds a little bit funner, more, you know, for the sex therapy sounds fun, more fun, but that's a size point.
But with that, I think there are two steps to your question, Andy. One is getting to the C-level, and the other is getting that C-level's attention, getting time with that person. Getting to the C-level is very difficult because they're very busy. I mean, their calendars are booked solid from start of day to end of day and into the evenings. So getting to that person is tough. Cold calling, that possibly could work, but what is most effective, and I think Rich was talking to this, and that is using connections to get to that person. Referrals. We were discussing this earlier today, how we're using a referral to get into one of the companies you were associated with in your prior life. So that is from a standpoint of getting to that person. If you can get referred in from a credible level, that can really help. Then the second step to that whole process is getting that person's attention. And what we experience and with what we see, with what we evaluate, you have to be credible. You have to gain their trust. And being an expert is usually the best way to do that. We do one thing, forensics. I've been doing this for 20-some-odd years. So I could almost go in blindfolded, not that I do. But the point is, I never experience a situation or hear a challenge that I've not heard or experienced before. So I have that credibility. And our clients' sales and account teams have that credibility when they're in at those C levels. But you have to know their language. If you're with a CFO, you've got to be able to talk finance, ROI. I mean, all of that's really key. If you're with a salesperson, a chief sales officer, it's going to be a different dialogue. But those are the two steps as I see it, getting to that person and getting that person's attention.
I'm having like a flashback of Gordon Gekko, you know, like, all right, tell me what you got, right? You got in the door, now what are you going to say, right?
The old be bold, be brief, and be gone.
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely. That's right. And I think, Candy, that's a great question because I want to just reiterate both the points our guests have said. Was, you know, and I've heard it from several of my CFO, you know, my clients and talking to their CFOs and CEOs, is that I ask them consistently when I'm doing a program and doing work with the sales organization's sales team. And I'll ask the CEO, CFO, because these people are selling to CFOs and CEOs on their own. I'm going to ask their company CEO and CFO to get come in the room and say, all right, how does a salesperson get your attention? And consistently what I hear today is that you don't have any idea, and he says this to his sales team, how many calls I get in a day. It's the calls that I get from people that have been referred into me are the ones that I take. And that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to actually engage with them. They have to get my attention. And Rick, to your point, is they, you know, they have to speak my language and they have to hit a hot button. So they can get in the door, but then they have to represent or else they're out the door just as quickly or their card is thrown into this, you know, cylindrical filing cabinet, right? So I think it's the referrals and then speaking the language, I think two key points that I've heard consistently. So,
And you need a sound bite. You have to be able to say what you do like that.
Yeah, be bold, be brief, and be gone, right?
That's right.
I mean, it's got to be bold and have that sound bite and have a solution. So as I think you're saying here, you know, Rich was around, you know, we're not flash in the pan here. We're going to be here for a long time.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just the patience. It's patience, and we're committed to this. And it's, you know, it's the high turnover that gets us to the door and to the table in most situations. It's we've been doing how long? I mean, with our organization right now, is how long have you all been doing this as a company? And then we'll ask them, well, don't you want to deal with the people at the company? The better question is, how long have the partners of the company been in this industry for? Because if you look at the collective experience at our company, it's probably more selling experience than 75% of the companies and the sales staffs in the metro Atlanta area because of the turnover, because of the rampant revolving door. Mm-hmm. And, the question was asked earlier, is it just my industry? Absolutely not. It's people trying to figure out what they're going to commit to professionally.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just finding those
commitment.
Exactly.
Well, speaking of that commitment, I mean, let me ask one more here because I feel like we've seen a shift here too. Do you guys in your particular industry, do you hire for knowledge or do you hire for culture?
That's a great question. And we actually talked about it last week at the company. Industry experience has been for knowledge. But I would rather take a hungry individual who's committed, who knows people and has the connections, and they're just learning. They're just their willingness to learn because we can teach them. We taught ourselves. We bring them on. We're going to have the patience to teach them. And once we teach them our way, the right way, and they're going to treat their new customers the way that we've treated ours, they're going to be there for a while. So I don't want the retread. I don't want that sales rep who's bounced around from company to company because the one thing you can't break is bad habits. And there's a reason that they're not at those 3, 4, 5 companies that they were previously at before. Maybe the companies gave them a fancy guarantee. Well, what happens when that guarantee runs out and they're still not selling? What happens then? Then they're back on the streets. They're looking for the next company to go get that guarantee from.
Makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Rick, so with that, all that said, as we start to come to the close, I have always liked to try and finish up with, so with all of your experience doing all the forensic work with sales organizations and all of the learnings you have someone that's new coming into the sales and in the sales arena. What kind of advice or what counsel would you offer to that particular new salesperson who's come to you and said, hey, I'm entering the world of sales. Any thoughts for me?
They have to learn how to listen. Selling is understanding both the expressed and unexpressed needs. So have open eyes, open ears. And as you learn and listen and take in what that prospect wants, you can put together a customized solution mm-hmm. to address those points. And oftentimes, that could entail recommendations that the customer or prospect didn't even know they needed. So listening is the most important sales attribute.
Outstanding. I love that. Listening. Rich, someone comes to you. New into the world of sales.
I think a lot of people want to get into sales because they look at the people that they know that are successful sales reps, and they say they have a pretty good living style.
Mm-hmm.
They have a good standard of living. And it doesn't happen overnight. which gets back to what I was saying about be patient. I mean, you're not going to go from 0 to 100 overnight. You have to be patient. More importantly, you have got to set quarterly and annual benchmark goals. And every single year, make sure that you're better than the year before. And then when you get on that path, then you will get to that point of the successful sales rep. And the last thing that I would leave is just be passionate about what you do, because you cannot pretend to be happy if you're not passionate about what you do. If you have all those three things, I would welcome a phone call from you.
Very so. Good. All right, so we heard listening, listen, and get out of your own way, I think, is that, Rick, I'll add that to the mix too, because I think some of the early things that you had shared, they've done some postmortems on their opportunities. You come in, you ask some questions, and you pull out those kernels and like, I didn't get that. So get out of your own way, because we have our own biases when we listen. So it's get out of your own way, but listen. And then also be basically going out there, set goals, and be persistent and have patience. Yeah? So I'm rephrasing.
Yeah. Passion and you can be the smartest person in the world. Someone smart told me this one time. You can be the smart and you can be the most intelligent. You can be a doctor. But truly, persistence pays off. So I'd take a persistent. I'd rather take a persistent person than an intellectual person any day of the week.
So noted. All right.
And there you go.
All right. With that, we have wrapping up another Atlanta Sales Talk radio show. I hope you enjoyed our guest today. And this is Steve Cadley and Andy Lowe.
Signing off.
And until next time, remember, everybody's in sales.